This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham.
So maybe you're a homeschooling mom and you think knowing more about Shakespeare will help with lessons for your kids. Or perhaps an English teacher so long steeped in the Bard that you've opened your own Shakespeare Performance Center, but you still want more. Or maybe you're a medical doctor just looking for some fun. Such are the folks and countless others from all walks of life who've been going to what's officially called the No Kidding Shakespeare Summer Camp for Adults in Stanton, Virginia, and have agreed to tell us about it. Of course, when we mention Shakespeare in Stanton, you probably realize the renowned American Shakespeare Center is involved, so we'll be hearing from folks in charge there as well. And if you've ever dreamed of going back to summer camp as a grown-up, or pondered how Shakespeare might make a difference in your life, you'll be welcome to join this hour's Camping with Shakespeare conversation too, coming up right after the news. Great to be with you. I'm Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. Got thoughts about what it might be like to go back to summer camp as a grown-up? Insights on how knowing more about Shakespeare could benefit someone's life? Questions on either or both? Already on the phone line with us from her offices in Augusta County, medical doctor Julie Plumley, an attendee at two of what are officially called the No Kidding Shakespeare Camps for Adults, sponsored by the American Shakespeare Center. Here in the Insight Studio, Ralph Allen Cohen, one of the co-founders of, as well as the director of mission at, that Shakespeare Center based in Stanton, Virginia, plus the center's manager of academic resources, Cass Morris. Thank you all for making time for us.
Great to be here.
Thank you so much for having us.
Nice to be here.
Well, Cass, let's pick on you first. What is a Shakespeare summer camp, or at least what is it when it's run by the American Shakespeare Center?
Well, all of our summer camps, both for youths and for adults, focus on giving campers an inside experience sort of into the life of an actor and the things they have to think about as they're putting up a play, the things that were true for Shakespeare's company and his actors 400 years ago and that our actors at the ASC still focus on. The youth camp is a three-week camp, and we make them put up a whole hour-long production, but the adult camp is shorter. It's 5 days. And so the experience comes in shorter snippets. They get to do little scenes, they work with cue scripts, and they all get to hear lectures and have workshops with wonderful scholars in the field, some of the top names that we have in Shakespeare studies, as well as with our ASC actors.
And can I just say it's a blast, or at least I thought it was, the two times I've done it.
You can absolutely say that, Julie. We love to hear that.
Yes, you could say it again. Do you mind having it on a blurb, please? It's a blast, Julie Plumley.
I'll be happy to do that.
Put that on next year's brochure.
Well, it really came out of so many of the parents mm-hmm. of the teenagers who would come and see what they had done, who kept saying, wow, I wish I had a camp like this. You know, wouldn't it be great to do this? And we also had a lot of friends from some work we'd done at UVA over the years, and they had been pressuring us to do it. And it just went great from the first day we opened the doors to it. It's been wonderful. And then why not? I mean, I think everything is shifting in the way we plan our lives. And it used to be you did this for the first 18 years, then college, then, and now things are so much more, I suppose you could say disorganized, but you get a buffet of things all your life, and why not let this be part of the buffet?
It's a bit of serendipity. I actually just thought of this. I found out about the youth camp 1 year after I had aged out of it, because the youth camp's in its 17th year, and it's for students ages 13 to 18, and I first found out about it when I was 19 years old, and I was so upset that I had already aged out of this thing that I wish I'd known about. And I said, man, I remember thinking, I wish they had one for college students. I wish they had one for adults. And they didn't at the time. But as it so happened, I ended up being with this company. And now I get to run the camp that I would have loved to have attended
when I was in college. You're lucky because you came right after Sarah Enloe got to be director
yes.
of the program. And she put it in. I mean, she's the one who made it happen to start with.
Julie Plumley, you're a medical doctor. You've lived in lots of places around the country. As a matter mm-hmm. of fact, several places around the world.
Mm-hmm.
You were a major in the Air Force when you retired from the Air Force.
This is true.
You're a medical pathologist.
Uh-huh. So what the heck am I doing at Shakespeare?
That's part of it, but there's also a deep, dark secret that we've learned about you that I'm going to give away. My understanding that it was only within the past few years that you begin to care at all about Shakespeare, that your sense was, when it comes to people who love Shakespeare, what's the big deal? Is that really true?
That is actually true. I was completely puzzled for most of my life why it took such a prominent place in education and in our culture. And I thought, I just don't get it. And then when I moved to Stanton and started going to plays, because I do have this tendency to be persistent about something that I don't understand, of wanting to understand it. And after my first Shakespeare play experience, and I'd even been in a few plays growing up, Shakespeare plays, and those I guess I had a little insight into. But after my first time seeing a Shakespeare production at Blackfriars, I thought, oh, well, that was totally amazing. Those characters, the plot lines, and how incredibly funny most of it is. And so it was a real revelation for me. And I think that is really what got me started on thinking, how in the world do they do that? And wanting to get some insight into that was why I first went to summer camp.
The feelings you expressed about what's the big deal? Why is it there? I mean, I think our goal, above all goals, is to have people come out of that theater and go, just like you just said, oh, I get it, you know, and to and to make Shakespeare's theirs. It's just such a joy for people to do that. And and our mission is to make it accessible, make those joys accessible.
Yeah.
And I think the camp is one of the great ways that people who have that terrific quirk you've got of having to figure out why, you know, something's supposed to be good, what's the big deal? I think the camp is a perfect place for that.
And part of what the camp does is really breaks that down into its component parts. So I think for people who are used to backgrounds where they're either in medicine or in other fields of life, if you're used to working with things like that, computers and putting a system together in that sort of way, you can break the plays down into the tools Shakespeare gave actors. And it becomes almost, I don't want to say mechanical, because that's definitely not true, but there is an art to it, to fitting the puzzle pieces together of scansion and of blocking and dance and clowning and all the other things that they do. I think it's a nice challenge for people if your brain works in a certain way.
And I think that the other thing is that it's self-selecting. I mean, that is to say, people who come to the camp kind of automatically get along because they already have the sort of same drive.
Right, we have something
interest.
In common.
Right from the
interest.
Start, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
With us by phone, Augusta County-based Doctor of Pathology Julie Plumley, here in the Inside Studio, the American Shakespeare Center's Manager of Academic Resources, Cass Morris, as well as the center's co-founder and director of mission, Ralph Allen Cohen. Ralph is also the Gonder Professor of Shakespeare at Mary Baldwin College and author of the book Shakespeare and How to Cure It. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. You can post to us on the Virginia Insight Facebook page. Hey, Dr. Plumley, what is the big deal about Shakespeare?
Oh, dear.
Put you on the spot with the big question now.
You would ask me that. Well, I think it's just the amazing job of weaving characters that are so human in their flaws and their virtues, and yet bestowing on them this wonderful language with these wonderful words, and then being clever enough to use a particular pattern of rhythm to which is the scansion that Cass and Ralph have referred to help the actors understand yet another, it's like another key into what it is they mean when they're saying these words. Because as you know, you can take a phrase and say it a couple different ways, and it can mean different things. And he applied that throughout. I think he had his finger on the pulse of what Elizabethan England thought was funny and what they cared about and what their political concerns were.
A lot of which haven't changed in 400
years. And that's, yeah, it's pretty much the same. You realize humans are going to be having the same issues over and over again.
And he has a great ear. I just finished directing Comedy of Errors. He has a great ear for what isn't funny. So, and how people making jokes that aren't funny are themselves funny. I mean, he's just got a terrific ear. And when you see ways of getting at that, it's really quite a revelation. It puts you in touch with somebody pretty smart over a 400-year span. It's mm-hmm. just a great way of reaching back and seeing what's so good about these people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that one of the things that's special about what we do is that our actors, like his, have learned to crack those codes and to be able to read very, very quickly what those voices are. And like you said, if you say a phrase two different ways, he either lets you know which way you ought to say it, or he makes it clear it's your choice. And that's mm-hmm. the other great thing about Shakespeare, is that he's not a dictator, he's a guide, and he does this all the time.
That's mm-hmm. definitely true. To one of your points about where character and those patterns of pentameter and scansion intersect, Julie, I was reminded of one of the great examples of that is in Measure for Measure, which is the play that we drew some of our scenes from for the work that the campers did this year. And the character of Angelo, who starts the play as a very, very staid, buttoned-up character, and he's enforcing all these vice laws in the city that he lives in that have gone unenforced for decades, it seems. You know, laws about prostitution and gambling and all these things that the citizens are joyfully doing all over the place. And when he gets power... As citizens will. And when he gets the power to enforce the laws, he does so. And his meter, the way in which he speaks in almost perfectly regular iambic pentameter, which is the ba-dump, 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 ba-dump rhythm, until he meets this girl, Isabella, who has come to plead for her brother's life because he's gotten a girl pregnant and needs to be pardoned. Well, needs to be pardoned from execution, according to Isabella. And Angelo is so tempted by her and so moved by her beauty and her ability to speak that after she leaves him, his meter goes haywire. He suddenly can't speak a line in regular pattern. And when I discovered that, I actually had help from one of our interns a few summers ago who she went and checked for me and said, yeah, he has almost no irregularities up until that point. And then he just goes off the charts. And that's Shakespeare showing you that he's been deeply affected in some way. And it's changed his very ability to express himself.
Yeah.
And the fact that he can do that, I find amazing.
Excuse me, because we're going to hit the break here in a second.
Okay.
And I realize you've only got a few more minutes to be with us. So if anybody wants to talk to you specifically, they've got to get to us before 3:30 at 888-WMRA-TALK. But somebody might be wondering, saying to themselves, you know, I'm kind of where Julie is. I'm not sure I really get what the big deal about Shakespeare is. Should I go to one of these summer camps, or should I do something else first?
Well, go to a show at the Blackfriars and go on their website. They've got sort of introductions to what plays are about, but that they don't tell you all of it, so they don't spoil the plot, and pick something that intrigues you and go check it out, because the thing that is really amazing is you don't sit there, I mean, unless you really are going with scholarly intent. I can tell you do not sit there in these performances and go, oh my goodness, his meter just changed. You go and get smacked by the vividness of these characters and the importance of the action. And if that moves you, then absolutely go to camp.
Well, we've got you with us for at least 10 more minutes, so I'm going to get more from you about that, I'm sure, as well as from our guests Ralph Allen Cohen and Cass Morris. And we've got some other people who've recently attended these Shakespeare summer camps in Stanton who are going to join in over the next 15 minutes or so. But if you listening have a question or comment, we'd love to hear from you as well at 888-WMRA-TALK. We'll be back in just a bit more than 1 minute. From the American Shakespeare Center in Stanton, Virginia, we have with us the center's director of mission and co-founder, Ralph Allen Cohen, as well as its manager of academic resources, Cass Morris, plus by phone, past participant in a couple of the center's summer camp for adults, Dr. Julie Plumley. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. And on the phone line, also with us now from Baltimore, Maryland, is high school English teacher Tom DeLeese, who has been attending the American Shakespeare Center's summer camps for many years now. In fact, I understand even before they officially called it a summer camp. Mr. DeLeese, thank you so very much for making some time for us.
Thank you.
So why have you been returning to these annual week-long events year after year? What have you been getting out of it?
Well, I started, I'm a high school English teacher for many years, and I started going to the Summer on the Lawn program through UVA when Ralph and ASC was doing it back then. And as a high school English teacher, I was struggling with ways to make Shakespeare relevant to my students. I'd started playing around a little bit with getting them up on their feet to perform it. And when I went to these things, it was like hitting the gold mine for a teacher. That inspired me to start my own theater company. So all of that was due to Ralph. And really, in one word, the reason I keep coming is Ralph.
Well, in one word, well, more than one word, Tom is our star student, because most people who come do enjoy doing it, but most of them don't go out and start a successful Shakespeare company, and you have done that with the Baltimore Shakespeare Factory. So Tom, having you there. One of the first favors Tom ever asked me was he was publishing a book, and would I do a blurb? So I have, this is quite a camper.
Tom, it's been a great... I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I got to ask this, because... And I think I've heard Julie in the past actually admit to this. One of the things that's really exciting for people when they first hear about this is just the idea of going to summer camp as a grown-up. But it sounds like you really don't view it as a fun break. You view it as like a life enrichment thing?
Oh, it's a fun break, too. It's absolutely, it's all of that. I've made a lot of friends over the years. There's a whole group of us that have been going since 2003, and this is kind of a big reunion for us every year when we come back to do it. We've been with Ralph and the group to England twice. So it's an enrichment thing for me as a teacher. It's an enrichment thing for me as somebody who is now directing Shakespeare, and it's just a lot of fun.
And I think that's part of what we really want people to enjoy, not just about the plays, but about the whole experience, is also that sense of camaraderie of this year's theme was actually collaboration and working together and finding that common thread between people and having a good time while doing it. The camps also always include a meal or a barbecue out at Ralph's house. We usually go on some kind of field trip, whether it's to a vineyard or some other interesting place, to let people relax and enjoy each other once they've started to make these great friendships, like Tom said.
And I know I've become something of a booster for Stanton, but it's because they've earned it. It's really quite a wonderful town. And people who, it's a great place to go because whatever we're doing, it's not far to anything else. And it's just so full of interesting things that are going on, other opportunities in music, good restaurants and all of that. It's just a great place to be.
This year we did a cast party at a local wine bar, Yelping Dog, and we had after a show a bunch of the actors came from both the troops and all the campers there, and it was just a great time. We closed the place down at midnight. They kicked us out because we wanted to keep talking to each other and just chatting about Shakespeare and life and each other.
So Mr. DeLeese, high school English teacher, how is your approach to teaching Shakespeare different than it would have been if you hadn't been going to these events?
It's given me a greater appreciation for the language. That was something that I always had trouble kind of wrapping my head around when I was first starting the teaching of Shakespeare. It also reinforced me the importance of making it come alive for the students by getting them up on their feet and doing it, and they can get a much deeper appreciation and understanding of the works by doing them rather than just looking at them as words on a page. So those are the main things as a teacher, that it's just made students. I mean, that's how this Shakespeare company that I run now started. It started as a group of students that decided they wanted to do more of what we did in the Shakespeare lesson after school. So we formed a Shakespeare group of high school kids. And then when they graduated, they wanted to do more. So we formed a, quote, adult company. And that morphed into summer camps and everything else, where I still have a kid from 2003 that's running my summer camp right now, starting next week. So it's something that's been lifelong for the students.
Well, Tom and Julie both, we are going to lose our connections with both of you in just a couple of minutes. So before both of you go, I'm curious if you can tell us and even talk to each other about this, since you've been at some of these camps together, what you've heard from others about what they say they get out of going to the No Kidding Shakespeare Summer Camp for Adults.
Oh, wow. Well, a lot of the people that come are educators, and they certainly all seem to really enjoy getting ideas, new approaches. They enjoy talking to each other about their experiences in trying to help their students have a greater appreciation for language. And I don't. There's just something fun about being around people that have a common interest, whether it's part of your vocation or your or an avocation.
Yeah, but, you know, I know that we don't want to lose the two of you. I'll just say really quickly, getting all of that and then also seeing top-notch Shakespeare in the evening. You know, it's like, so what
you do
when you're relaxing is watch great actors at it. And it's really, that's part of it. Too.
It's true. And one of the very cool things, I mean, because although, you know, I am a physician, I will confess that my bachelor's degree was in performing arts. So I've always had a part of me that was interested in performance. And one of the huge fun things is getting to watch the actors rehearse, or even if they're the very early rehearsals where they're still just sitting around a table with the text, and watching them go through a process of discovery and get excited and find something in the script. And because one of the great things about the performances is all the energy that is in the room because of the whole using the Shakespearean staging methods where the lights are on and the actors see you and you see the actors and you know they see you. And it's a very energetic community experience. And to see some of the early parts of that, it's electrifying. I can't think of any other better words than it's just fun.
And Tom, anything that strikes you about what you've heard from other people?
Well, from other people, they just love how accessible Shakespeare becomes for them. And the staff at ASC always does a great job in incorporating all kinds of different things relating to Shakespeare, from architecture to music to dance to the study of the language. The actors are so nice and so accessible that, you know, no matter what question you ask them, they never make you feel dumb. You know, same with everybody at ASC. So it's just, you can learn so much about not only the plays and the man, Shakespeare, and the times. And it's all done in a really fun, easily accessible way that makes you really begin to realize why Shakespeare has come down as this immortal figure through the ages.
Speaking to us from his home in Maryland, high school English teacher and founder of the theater company, the Baltimore Shakespeare Factory, Tom DeLise. It was good talking with you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Now, Dr. Julie Plumley, pathologist in Augusta County, has to, we understand, actually go and do some medical work this afternoon. So we have to let her off the phone as well. But Julie, before you go, anything else you want people to know about Shakespeare, about the summer camps that you've been attending, about what you've been discovering?
Well, probably hundreds of things, but I was just interested... I really enjoyed hearing what Tom had to say because he comes at this from a totally different perspective. Well, not totally, but quite different perspective than I do. And he and the thing that strikes me is that he was talking about, you see why Shakespeare comes down to us as this, you know, amazing figure. But what this camp and what the shows do for you is understand it, and it's all because he was so human, and he had such a great perception of what it was like to be human and able to help us talk to each other about what that's like. And if nothing else, just that, just exploration of the human experience in verse and costume with music.
And to quote you, and if that moves you, absolutely go to camp.
Write that down.
I've written it for you. I'll send it to you.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Dr. Julie Plumley, thank you so very much. Have a great afternoon.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So, Cass, I get to pick on you now because Julie reminded me just now of something I've heard you say in the past. This is an actual quote. Shakespeare is all about humanity.
I think so. I think he shows you every possible side of humanity that you can see, good and bad, often in the exact same person, which, as we know, happens all the time. No one is entirely good or bad. Friar Lawrence in Romeo and Juliet has an entire speech about it, about in every good thing there's some bad, and in every bad thing there's some good. And I think he really, that's why I was drawn to Shakespeare very, very early in life. I picked up Romeo and Juliet when I was 11, and then the one that I really fell in love with was Much Ado About Nothing, which I saw the next year. And the character of Beatrice to a 12-year-old girl who didn't know who she was or who she wanted to be yet, but Shakespeare handed me this remarkably eloquent, feisty woman who was also vulnerable and also had a heart she needed to protect. I think everyone can find that character in Shakespeare for themselves. Everyone can find at least one character, if not dozens upon dozens, who speak to you and who seem to be knowing what's in your heart from 400 years across time, which I think is just beautiful. And I think it's something Shakespeare does better than most writers throughout history have been able to do.
Do you get it about Shakespeare? Has it meant something for you? Or are you a little bit like our previous telephone guest that for much of your life you've been wondering what the big deal is about? Ralph, we have somebody else on the phone. Can you wait on what you're going to say? Will you remember?
Oh, sure. No,
you
I
want to make a note.
It already, so
Well, next on the phone line with us is a mother of three who is still homeschooling. We understand two teenagers at their home in Hatboro, Pennsylvania, and who as well teaches others about homeschooling. Robin Furnish, welcome to Virginia Insight.
Thank you very much.
So we've heard that you began getting interested in Shakespeare only fairly recently, and that your first time at this thing we've been talking about, the No Kidding Shakespeare Camp for Adults in Stanton, was just this year?
Yes.
What can you tell
week.
Us about that?
Oh, it was a wonderful experience. I had gotten interested in Shakespeare about 2 years ago in a teacher apprenticeship that I am in, and found out, I fell in love with Shakespeare. We read Julius Caesar it was my first Shakespeare play about 2 years ago. And through that, I fell in love with the language. I fell in love with the rhetoric of Shakespeare, and started downloading as much stuff as I could, and found this wonderful Shakespeare Audible. It was a great courses that I started listening to called How to Read and Understand Shakespeare, and he mentioned the American Shakespeare Center on it, and it was only 5 hours away from me, and I was so excited to find out that there was something wonderful near me, and through their website found out that they did teacher seminars, and I started going to teacher seminars, and through the teacher seminars I found out about the No Kidding Shakespeare Camp. And I've just been trying to absorb as much of Shakespeare as I possibly can.
Robin, I'm super impressed that Julius Caesar was what got you to love Shakespeare, because I love Julius Caesar. I think it's a fantastic play, but it's one that terrifies thousands and thousands of high school students each year. I know that Ralph has thoughts on why we should or shouldn't force it upon 10th graders.
I love the play. It was actually the first thing I directed for the American Shakespeare Center. And I have directed it since. I think it's misread, and I think it's misread in high schools in many ways. But I also think that you give that to a 10th grader, and if you're not able to see what makes it good, then it becomes a lot of long speeches and by famous people. You can see why the curriculum over the years. I mean, Julius Caesar is the curriculum play from before. I mean, from my parents all had to read Julius Caesar. Everyone has to read it. But it's easy to see why. You know, these really famous characters, this assassination, these are famous things. And also, if you're taking Latin, it goes really well with Latin as well. So it's all of that. But really, that's not what makes it a great show. And I think that what you've learned, and hey, Robin, by the way, is that it's the play that makes the play. It's the fact that people get to play with that language.
Mm. So I'm always tickled pink when someone declares their love for it.
Yeah. I fell in love with Brutus, actually, and he reminded me a lot of my husband. And I actually got into a very heated discussion with another teacher in my apprenticeship over him because he reminded her of someone that she loathed.
Oh.
And
Brutus did, or your husband did? Okay,
exactly.
So you gotta, you know, for people especially who are not real clear on the Brutus character in that play, explain what you meant about why you fell in love with Brutus and what was it about him that reminded you of your husband.
Oh, he reminded me of him because he just, you could see just him really wrestling with this idea that he was frustrated with what was going on. He was frustrated with Caesar, but he also loved him. And there was this tension that was that just really drove him it just drove him crazy for a while, and you could just really see that. And it reminded me of my husband because he was working in a job that was really frustrating to him. And it was that back and forth, what do I do, what do I do? And just reminded me so much of my husband. And so I had this real heart for him, and he would snap at his wife, and my friend was like, he's so mean to her. And I said, no,
I'm glad you took it better than Portia does.
That's true. That's probably true. But I felt for him in that moment that he wasn't being mean to her. He was just in such agony over what to do. And I just loved that about it.
I want to go back to something that Cass said about Beatrice. And Cass said, you know, you can see yourself in the character, you can feel the character in you. And the really interesting thing, I think, is that I, as a man, can see Beatrice in me and see me in Beatrice. It actually transcends gender.
It does. I'm an Antony girl big time because he has this, at least I want to be, because he has this confidence that propels him through life. And he sort of has this attitude that if I dare to do the thing, it'll work. And I'm not sure I'm always like that, but I want to be. I want to have that sureness and that drive to go forward.
Robin Furnish, homeschooling specialist from Hatboro, Pennsylvania. Thank you so very much for making time for us on Virginia Insight.
Thank you for having me.
See, if I went to this camp, maybe I'd learn to talk well enough to be able to be on the radio. We're going to continue here in just a bit more than 1 minute. She is a writer, a novelist, and a performer in an independent murder mystery theater company. But that's in her spare time. We've asked Cass Morris here today primarily because of the half dozen or so roles she plays in the American Shakespeare Center's education department. Although if we get a chance, maybe we can ask her about that new historical fantasy novel. Ralph Cohen is co-founder of the Stanton, Virginia-based American Shakespeare Center. His most recent book was a text for teaching Shakespeare that's called Shakespeare and How to Cure It. Ralph is also the Gonder Professor of Shakespeare at Mary Baldwin College. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Have we missed anything yet about what the big deal is about Shakespeare?
Well, I think you're always, it's hard to put into words, so you're always going to miss a little of it. I like to say that for many, many years, when I was getting educated about, you know, literature, I thought it was because of what he said, of the things he said, that and how well he says them. And he certainly is one of the great poets of our language. There's no question of that. But I have come to think that it's not so much how well he says them, it's how well he listened to people, that he could hear people. He can hear silences. He knows, and the thing is that using meter, which is what When we talk about scansion, it's what our actors have to do. They have to find this, you know, this is the word that scares everybody the most, but they have to find the iambic pentameter in that verse line. Most of Shakespeare is written in iambic pentameter. That is to say, 10 syllables in the line, and every other syllable is stressed. To be or not to be, that is the question. That happens to be a feminine ending. I should have used something else because it has a little ting at the end. But he will show you in that line even where silences take place. Mm-hmm. You can hear him not talk. You can hear characters say, not know what to say. It's just an amazing kind of hearing that he did. And so rather than think of him as like Spencer or Faulkner or Jane Austen, a great thing to do is to think of him as Bill Cosby or Robin Williams or somebody like that who was a mimic and could just hear what was going on and just heard humanity, hear their embarrassments, hear their sense of pride, know when you would get angry, be able to write the line so an actor can feel that little flip. I feel a lot that it's how well he hears and how much he leaves open to the actor.
And you could hear so many different kinds of people, too. You get such a broad cross-section of, you know, high-status characters, low-status characters, court, country, people who are really good with language, people who think they're good with language but aren't. I think we all know some of those in life, people who speak verbosely and use the ten-cent words when the one-cent word would do. He writes those characters. He writes very humble characters. He writes people who just plain out say what they mean, and he had an ear for all of that.
I'll try to give a quick example. I mean, I'll try.
Yeah.
With five, you know, so it's like six words, okay? So this is the opening of Antony and Cleopatra, and it opens with two Romans disapproving of Antony because he's lounging around and having this affair with
carousing with this foreign queen,
and having too much fun and drinking too much and eating too much, and they're very disapproving.
Living a good life.
And the couple comes out, and right away she says to him, you know, tell me how much you love me, and Antony wiggles out of that as though we're in a great comedy.
A rom-com.
He goes, oh, there's beggary in the love that can be reckoned. And they're essentially about to make out in public when a servant comes in. So what Cass was just saying about little parts is so true. And the servant, and this is what the actor would see on the page. The servant says, news, my good lord, from Rome. Now, by itself, that seems like nothing. News, my good lord, from Rome. But actually, for the actor, it's all sorts of signals. First of all, a servant showing up in front of the four people in the world who run the world would not say the word news first. They would start with my good lord. Then they would, you know, they'd probably go on their knees. So by putting the word news before my good lord, it shows the actor that this messenger is in a big hurry. Then he remembers, I have to say my good lord. So he says, my good lord. And then here he is in Egypt. It's like you've shown up in Tahiti and your boss is there and he's out with favorite cocktail on the beach. And then you have to remind him of work. And then he says, from Rome. And so the actor could decide if he wanted to, based on that, he's got three big things to do. Show he's in a hurry. Remember that he should have said something else before, thereby revealing his low status. And then apologize that I have to bring you news about business. That's in one line of a character.
It doesn't even have a name.
Doesn't even have a name. And you can take that and you can look at that in just forever.
I was talking about exactly that with some of our youth campers. We also do a camp for students ages 13 to 18. I was doing a Q-script workshop with them yesterday, which is when they're working from just sides, just reading their own lines, not the full text. And I was talking to them about minor parts and how much juice there can be in them. We were doing a scene from Hamlet and the two guardsmen who, you know, in so many productions could just be spear carriers. They could just be guy who stands on wall with sword or other sharp implement. But Shakespeare doesn't let them be that. Shakespeare lets them be afraid and cold, and he gives them distinct personalities. One's sort of, you know, more aggressive than the other, or one has a better sense of humor than the other. And a lot of that's down to how the actors choose to interpret it. But Shakespeare gives that to you, even in the tiniest roles. which I think also just goes to show what we were talking about earlier, how much she understands humanity. Everyone is the center of their own play. If you're Bernardo in Hamlet,
it's a play about Bernardo.
It's a play about Bernardo.
It's a play about Bernardo.
If you're that messenger, this is the story of the worst message this messenger ever had to deliver. That's the story of Antony and Cleopatra as far as that guy's concerned.
Yeah.
From the American Shakespeare Center in Stanton, Virginia, we have with us the center's director of mission and co-founder, Ralph Allen Cohen, as well as the center's manager of academic resources, Cass Morris, here to tell us at least in part about why for several years now, every summer, they've been doing something called the No Kidding Shakespeare Camp for Adults. I don't know if Meredith is shy or not. I don't want to make it sound like I'm jumping to that conclusion, but we got this post from her on the Facebook page just before you started speaking a few minutes ago, so she may have gotten at least part of what she was looking from you already, Ralph, but I'm guessing you may have more. What she says here is, I would love to hear about how rhetoric factors into the processes explored at the camp. I've attended the camp for 2 years.
I'm going to turn this over to our our rhetoric groupie, head groupie, and that'd be Cass. But I will say before I give it over to her that rhetoric is something that we work on a lot in the graduate program at Mary Baldwin, and I took it up when I first started teaching this course on performance in Shakespeare, and I took it up not knowing much about it. And every year the students want more of it. And with that, I'll turn it over to the student who probably more than any of them wanted it, and that's Cass.
Me and Glenn Shadell, I think, who was a classmate of mine who's now stage manager for the resident troupe. Yes, I did a little fist pump in the air here in the studio when I got that question. So thank you, Meredith. Rhetoric is, I think, something that's become a scary word and a dirty word in modern parlance. It has come to have very negative connotations because of political rhetoric, and we hear about violent rhetoric, and it's become an idea that it's something that's used against you. But for Shakespeare and his actors, it was just another tool, much like the iambic pentameter. It gives you patterns. Rhetoric is nothing more and less than structuring your words to achieve a desired effect. And this takes many different forms. It comes in forms of repetition. It comes in forms of arranging contrast in a speech, or of building a series, building up to a point. It comes in metaphor. And in the camp over the years, and some years we focus more on it than others, we look at those devices and we look at how they give clues to actors. It's like what I was saying earlier in the program about Angelo, when he's, I can use another Angelo example because I just worked on this speech. At about the same time his pentameter goes off the rails, he also starts using a rhetorical figure, which divorces agency from himself. He starts assigning agency to all kinds of inanimate objects, to different parts of his body, as though they were capable of independent action. And it's a way of showing that this character is avoiding responsibility for what's going on all of a sudden. This man who was so responsible and was taking responsibility for everybody else's lives suddenly doesn't want to take responsibility for his own. So it's like pentameter in the same way. It's a character clue. And in the camp, we have often done workshops focusing on helping people to tease that out, to find that instruction that Shakespeare is giving to actors.
So
we're going to go next to Stanton. Barbara, thanks for calling in on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment for Cass Morris and or Ralph Allen Cohen, please.
Yes, I would like to hear some high praise for the fabulous actors that we have performing all of the performances at the theater.
You'd like to hear some, or you'd like to give some?
I'd like to hear some, and I will take it off the phone.
Well, the actors are they're why people come. They're not just to the shows, but it's like we can do whatever programming we want. But I think that after a week of the camp, the things they remember is when these brilliant people get together and talk to them, or come in or ask questions, or watching them rehearse.
And these are professional actors.
These are all professional actors.
They come to perform at Blackfriars.
We audition in New York. We audition at other places in the country. I'm going to just interrupt myself for a second and say I love to watch New Yorkers or Londoners walk in to the Blackfriars Playhouse, because to them, for the most part, they're kind of going, they're sort of already condescending and patronizing. Okay, we'll go look at this little snake farm in the South. We'll take a look. And then they walk in and their jaws drop, because it is a beautiful, as gorgeous space. right? The other jaw-dropping goes when they hear our actors and they see how good we are, top to bottom. They're great actors. They're my colleagues. And I'm an English professor, and I am supposed to know scansion and rhetoric. And I will tell you that when we're doing table work, I bow to them all the time. Some of them have been in as many as 100 productions, mm-hmm. and they can do the scansion. They can do the rhetoric.
They're so multi-talented.
They're just amazing. And so I should have said earlier, we are they, and they are the ones that give us. We talk about this all the time. They're the ones that make us the stardust. They're the stardust to what we do.
And in education, we take so many of our programs from them, either directly or indirectly. Some of it's from observation, but sometimes they've even worked with us on developing workshops. Benjamin Kearns, who was an actor with us for many years, helped us develop a workshop on audience contact that we could not have thought about in the right ways that have been the most effective without his help and his assistance. So all of our actors are, I mean, they're also musicians, they're also educators, and they're just wonderful, generous souls who are always happy to meet with our campers and to share their experiences with them and get into fantastic debates with them. It's a really wonderful thing. It's why I like the cast parties so much, is seeing our campers
with those people.
With those people.
Well, Cass uses the expression audience contact, and she uses it though people know what it means. but our actors perform on a stage surrounded by people they can see because mm-hmm. we don't turn out the lights. And they have learned over the years that acknowledging an audience member in some way is built into the lines. And they are the experts on how to go about doing that. When it is you bring an audience member in, when it is you refer to the audience as a collective, when it is you refer to a single member of the audience. Now, that, I think, may sound dry from the outside, but if you're at the camp, it's part of it because you are now watching them apply their trade and you're on the inside. You know what they're doing and you know how they're working with audiences. And it is not a far leap from understanding how to work with an audience and understanding how to work with a class mm-hmm. or understanding how to be effective in a committee meeting or understanding what leadership is about. All of those things are so tied up in the way in which we communicate with one another. For so many years, I have loved radio, partly because you hear the human voice, and you're there alone with it, and it sounds like you're being talked to. You know, it's words making pictures in your head. And when you can do that collectively at our place or as part of the camp, it's a happy day. You're on a roll. And I think that you can hear from the campers who've been with us that they've enjoyed that role. They really enjoy that role.
Barbara, thank you again for your call. Cass Morris, I'm afraid we're almost out of time, so I'm not going to be able to talk to you too much about your newest novel.
That's right, I'll come back
later. Although maybe we'll get you back once it's published. But you did tell us a bit ago about Shakespeare being, in your view, all about humanity and how that had touched you first when you were a 12-year-old girl, finding yourself identifying with a character in Much Ado. So let me end with putting you on the spot with this question. What can you tell us about how you are different in your world because of what you feel you've learned from Shakespeare?
Oh, wow. It's illuminating in some ways. It's a window into your own soul that you might not know had been there. As a teenager, as an adult, not that long ago, it sometimes feels like I've had my heart broken, and there have been Shakespeare characters who were there for me in that. Adriana has a beautiful speech about, you know, feeling like the person you love has emotionally abandoned you. I've fallen in love again, and Cressida has a wonderful speech about how awkward and just unimaginably blushful and tongue-twisted that can make you. So I think it gives you that awareness, and it makes you realize that whatever you're feeling, you're not alone. Other people have felt this too. Other people will continue to feel this too. Shakespeare felt this too, and knew people who felt this too. And for hundreds of years, other people have enjoyed that. It brings you together with so much of the world in a beautiful way.
Our guests have been Cass Morris, Manager of Academic Resources at the American Shakespeare Center in Stanton, Virginia. Ralph Allen Cohen, co-founder and director of Mission at that center. Plus, earlier in the hour, recent attendees at the center's annual No Kidding Shakespeare Summer Camp for Adults, Tom DeLise, Robin Furnish, and Dr. Julie Plumley. Thank you all so very much for making time for us.
Thank you so much, Tom. This was great.
Virginia Insight's executive producer, Matt Bingay. Dan Easley is our technical director. Our associate producers are Terry Ward and Bob Levicky. Some of our break music is supplied by Robert Jaspe and Inner Rhythm. Podcasts of this program available on the Virginia Insight tab at WMRA.org. When you get to the page for today's broadcast, you will see links to more information about our guests, the American Shakespeare Center, and its wide variety of programs. Thanks so much for tuning in for this edition. I'm Tom Graham. Hope we can get together again soon for more insight.